Hello, it's Debbie, reading from the e-edition for the Decatur Herald and Review on Wednesday, November 11th. Actually, it's Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. I will get oriented here. Starting with a business report, ADM reports weaker earnings. This is out of Chicago. Chris Lusvardi, who's a staff writer for Herald and Review, Chicago. Quarterly earnings for Archer Daniels Midland Company tumbled as the company reported financial results Tuesday that were down 27% from a year ago. ADM's adjusted operating profit was $684 million in the third quarter, down from $941 million a year ago. It reported adjusted earnings per share of 60 cents, down from 86 cents the same period last year. The decrease in profit, which was below Wall Street expectations, came even with massive corn and soybean harvests in North America and South America, along with other key production areas around the globe, creating ample commodity supplies. CEO and President Juan Luciano said during a conference call with analysts, ethanol margins shrank and the strong dollar curbed U.S. grain exports. Despite the setbacks, Luciano said ADM remains committed to its long-term approach, which includes recent acquisitions of other companies. It's long-term that we're building a great company here for ADM, Luciano said. We don't worry about short-term headwinds. Luciano said corn processing decreased 176 million on lower bioproducts results. Bioproducts dropped from 183 million to 40 million despite of strong domestic demand for gasoline with low oil prices, Luciano said. Sweeteners and starches remain solid amid tight supplies, he said. Luciano said the company is confronting weak industry ethanol margins with production levels remaining strong, resulting in high industry inventory levels. ADM's new wild flavors and specialty ingredients segment experienced a tough quarter with earnings of $70 million, Luciano said. He said the impact of macroeconomic headwinds with weaker demand from some emerging economies and the strong U.S. dollar. Input costs were high, which Luciano said put pressure on margins and volumes. Chief Financial Officer Ray Young said the results for the wild flavor segment can be expected given the time of year after a strong second quarter. We're all learning the seasonality of the business, Young said. After the second quarter, you always see declines. You have to understand the seasonality. The wild flavor segment was created at the start of 2015. ADM has spent $819 million on capital projects, which Young says puts it on track to finish on the low end or below its projected $1.1 billion to $1.3 billion estimate for the year. Young said balance sheet remains strong, as it's been actively working on recent acquisitions. In recent months, ADM closed on the sale of its global cocoa business and acquired Eastern Foods. It announced this week the completed purchase of certain assets of East Starch CV, a 50-50 joint venture with Tate & Lyle in Europe. The East Starch acquisition expands ADM Corn's business. ADM now owns corn wet mills in Bulgaria and Turkey and a 50% stake in a wet mill in Hungary. Tate & Lyle acquired full ownership of a specialty-focused plant in Slovakia as it exited the bulk ingredients plant in Bulgaria, Turkey, and Hungary. Tate & Lyle said it received cash consideration. We're also making strong progress in driving operational efficiencies, which will further enhance our cost position, Luciano said. We remain committed to our balanced approach to capital allocation for our shareholders. The company has returned $2.3 billion to shareholders through dividends and repurchase of 37.5 million shares in the first 9 months of 2015. End of that article. Next, education. Small school districts create sharing opportunities. This is by Valerie Wells, another staff writer for H&R. Assumption. In small school districts, teachers can feel isolated from others who teach in their subject area. They might be the only reading teacher or science teacher in the building. While the occasional conference can provide a place to meet others, it's not the same as collaborating with colleagues. At a conference, it's someone standing in front of you telling what to do, said Nicole Cunningham, who teaches literature to 6th, 7th, and 8th graders at Okaw Valley Middle School. When Central A&M Middle School Principal Ryan Scott, Moulton Middle School Principal Russ Tomblin, and Okaw Valley Middle School Principal Ross Forlines all took a class together, they began talking about the problems a small district presents, and a top concern was that teachers don't have the professional development and collaboration opportunities they would in a larger district. The obvious answer, Scott said, was to create a professional learning community among small districts to allow teachers to get together. Cunningham is the only literature teacher in her building, she said, so the chance to exchange ideas with the literature teachers from the other districts is a boon to her. I talk to other teachers, even if they're not in my subject area, said Renee Oldham, who teaches reading at Central A&M Middle School. But while that gives her a chance to talk about general lesson planning and classroom management issues, it doesn't provide the subject-specific methods of teaching that are possible with colleagues in the same field. Nathan Bohannon, who teaches 7th and 8th language arts at Central A&M, told colleagues in his small group how he gradually introduces research and outlines over the weeks prior to the 8th grade research paper assignment, giving the students plenty of opportunity to practice those skills before the pressure of producing a research paper is upon them. By the time they begin their research paper project, making an outline and tackling a big paper is far less intimidating. The science and math teachers met in September and have already expressed interest in doing that again in the spring, Scott said. Our overall goal and objective is to serve as a resource to each other because we're all teaching the same thing, he said. The same standards to the same basic student population with the same assessment to prove whether our students are proficient. We're all in the trenches with similar goals and resources, so we might as well help each other because we're kind of limited and isolated. One teacher might have an especially effective way of teaching a concept and can share that with the others, while another might be struggling with that very thing. And when they can consult with each other, students and teachers alike will benefit. The whole idea behind it was, we're a little school, Forline said. Some schools have 3 or 4 reading teachers and they can meet every day and talk about it. I have a single one. Our idea was we wanted to create a community where now we can have my teacher and whatever struggles she's having, and she can have 10 or 11 people to bounce an idea off of. We're all in the same boat with the same small schools, struggling economies. We're teaching same stuff to similar demographics. So why not share? End of that article. Next, government and politics. General Assembly's bacon backers rush to defense. Kurt Erickson, who is the Herald and Review's Springfield bureau chief, put this together. Springfield, a group of Illinois lawmakers is rushing to the defense of bacon. Against the backdrop of a recent report linking processed meat to cancer, 6 Republicans introduced a resolution last week showing their support of bacon and other pork products. Asked Tuesday if the proposal stems from the World Health Organization report warning about the health effects of eating certain meat products, State Representative Steve Anderson of Geneva said, "You betcha." It was a direct response to that. Members of the newly rendered bacon lobby include Anderson, Avery Byrne of Raymond, Grant Wehrle of Naperville, Mark Batenick of Plainfield, Reggie Phillips of Charleston, and Keith Wheeler of Oswego. All are freshmen members of the House. The non-binding legislation outlines the impact pork producers have on Illinois, with more than 2,000 farms and 10,500 jobs providing a $1.8 billion boost to the state's economy. I felt there should be a small legislative response in support of our pork producers, said Anderson, who describes himself as a big bacon fan. The WHO report said eating 50 grams of processed meat a day, the equivalent of about 2 slices of bacon, can increase the risk of cancer by 18%. It compared lunch meat and other processed meats to cigarettes and asbestos. Anderson said said the resolution is attempting to take some of the sizzle out of the report. It may instill fear about a perfectly healthy thing to eat as long as it's eaten in moderation, Anderson said. The key to eating bacon and gaining health benefits is keeping portions to reasonable sizes, the resolution notes. Wheeler said he joined in supporting the legislation because his family was in the hog farm business. I know there are a lot of messes in Springfield to clean up, Wheeler said, but pork producers are an important part of our economy. Even if the GOP-sponsored resolution doesn't pan out in the Democrat-controlled chamber, it still may make a key official in Governor Bruce Rauner's administration happy. Jim Kachik, the governor's chief liaison with the General Assembly, is the former executive director of the Illinois Pork Producers Association. The legislation is House Resolution 839. End of that section. More government and politics. This is by Allison Petty of the H&R staff. Decatur. Former Macon County Board member and Central Illinois Democratic Party activist Mark Wicklund announced Tuesday his campaign to represent the 13th Congressional District. Wicklund, 47, is challenging U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, a second-term Republican from Taylorville. He also could face David Gill, a four-time Democratic congressional candidate who said he will seek the seat as an independent. In a news conference at the Decatur Civic Center, Wicklund blasted Davis, calling him part of the Republican Party of No and saying Davis had never seen an extremist Republican proposal that he didn't like. "We are going to build a new coalition that brings together seniors, organized labor, working families, farmers, students, women, and veterans who are ready to elect a congressman who will fight for them, not against them," he said. Wicklund is a disabled steelworker who served on the county board from 2010 to 2013 and as treasurer of the Macon County Democrats for 6 years, ending in 2014. He serves as the president of the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corps board and said he also had been working with the Army Wounded Warrior Program advocating on veterans' issues. His son, Adam Wicklund, suffered a hemorrhagic stroke while on leave from the Army in 2013, caused in part by his proximity to explosions from IEDs while serving in Afghanistan. Having been increasingly aware of disabled veterans' needs through the experience, Wicklund said he reached out to Davis to work together and did not receive a response. "But this is not just about Adam," Wicklund said. "There are thousands of young veterans like him who need help when they come home and they aren't getting it." Wicklund said he'd been seeking support across the district for several months and has already gotten a positive response. He said he will be able to make connections with Republicans and Democrats and already has great friendships with people in both parties, from both parties. "We haven't had a real good Democratic candidate run in this district, somebody that's known in the district from one end to the other, knows labor rights, the labor movement, and is able to reach across party lines and pick up votes outside the Democratic Party," he said. "I know. I am that candidate." End of that article. End of the front page. An AP article on page 2 brought from AP by Don Babin. Chicago. Authorities will announce that a Northern Illinois police officer whose shooting death led to a massive manhunt in September killed himself, an official briefed on the crime investigation told the AP. The Lake County Sheriff's Office has called a news conference for today to announce conclusive results of the investigation. The official spoke to the AP Tuesday night on condition of anonymity because he was not authorized to brief the media. So here we have the media reporting it. The investigation into the death of Lieutenant Charles Joseph Glinowitz determined that the Fox Lake officer died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Other media outlets reported Tuesday, all citing anonymous sources. A spokesman for the sheriff's office, Christopher Covelli, declined any comment Tuesday evening. Glinowitz, an Army veteran affectionately known as G.I. Joe, radioed on September 11. He was chasing three suspicious men on foot. Backup officers later found his body 50 yards from his squad car. Authorities said in October that the officer, 52, was shot with his own weapon. He was struck by two rounds. One hit his ballistic vest with the force of a sledgehammer, and another that had pierced his upper chest. Lake County Major Crimes Task Force Commander George Filenko said at the time, after Glenowitz's shooting, a massive manhunt ensued with hundreds of officers searching houses, cabins, and even boats on the chain of area lakes. Authorities released a vague description of three suspects, though no one was ever arrested. Flags flew at half-stand and staff in honor of the 30-year police veteran after the shooting in Fox Lake, a close-knit community of 10,000 residents located about 50 miles north of Chicago. Signs with the officer's pictures hung in storefront windows. The tattooed officer with a shaved head was described by those who knew him as tough when needed, but also as sweet and a role model to youngsters aspiring to go into law enforcement. More than 100 investigators stayed on the case for weeks, though questions arose in mid-September, and investigators began to concede they could not rule out suicide or an accident. One hint came when Lake County Coroner Dr. Thomas Ridd announced that Glenowitz was killed by a single, devastating shot to his chest. That prompted an angry response from Filenko, who said the release of such details puts the entire case at risk. Glenowitz's family dismissed the suggestion of suicide. His son, D.J. Glenowitz, said his father never once thought of taking his own life and described how his dad spoke excitedly about what was planned to do after retiring. Glenowitz had four children. End of that article. Next, in education, certified nurse assistants saver certification. Decatur. This is by Valerie Wells from the staff. When you have wanted something for a long time and finally achieve it, it can be emotional. As Caitlin Durbin accepted her certified nurse assistant certificate at the Adult Ed and Training Center on Tuesday, her eyes overflowed with tears. "My mom's been an RN for 35 years," Durbin said. "I wanted to follow in her footsteps for so long, and it means so much to be able to do this. It's so rewarding to be able to hold hands and touch the heart of another person." Sisters Tosha Coley and Shatonia Zintara graduated together, and Coley also teared up. "It's been a long 8 weeks," she said. "It's something I wanted so bad. Just being involved in something, being able to change somebody's life and make it better for them is very rewarding." Zintara has a husband and four children, and she said she's finally reached the point where it was time to do something for herself. She started work this week at Fair Havens Christian Home and will begin training to become a registered nurse in January. "After years of wanting to enter the healthcare field, she's finally on her way. I didn't want to finish clinical training," she said with a laugh. "I loved it so much. I loved it so much." Certified nurse assistant classes are one of the bridge programs at the center, Director Rocky Wilkerson said. Of more than 70 potential students who took the entrance exam, only 7 reached graduation day, thanks to showing up on time and doing what it took to complete the course. They took personal and professional development, 104 hours of theory, 42 hours of clinical, and completed professional portfolios. The idea to move people through a process that ultimately ends in post-secondary education and employment. Oh, the idea is to move people through a process that ultimately ends in post-secondary education and employment. Thanks to a grant from the Illinois Community College Board and Illinois WorkNet Youth Grant, the class was free. Clinical experience was offered by Imboden Creek Living Center, and their instructor, Kim Daly, a registered nurse, told them that healthcare careers present a lot of challenges and responsibility. "It's a hard job, but so very important," she said. End of that article. Continuing on page 3 of the Decatur Herald and Review, e-edition, local, Jurger Pediatric Dentistry Candy Buyback Treats Soldiers. Decatur, by Allison Petty from the staff. The circle of good just kept on going at Jurger Pediatric Dentistry on Tuesday. All day long, kids could bring in their Halloween candy in exchange for cash. $1 per pound of candy with a cap of 5 pounds. Operation Enduring Support collected the candy and thank you notes from the children to send to U.S. soldiers at Christmas time. "So many of them are out in the desert," said Billy Howell, a volunteer with the organization. "This is a treat for them. They don't get things like that." In the case of Oak Grove Elementary School, the positively extended The positivity extended one extra step. Students from all grades donated their candy, and two sixth grade classes brought it in as part of a community service effort. Monies raised from the collection will help the students make Thanksgiving food baskets for needy families, said sixth grade teacher Stephanie Beller. They're a really good group, and they like to promote giving back to the community, Beller said. It's a good way for them to give some service hours. Mackenzie Schwartz, 12, and Kayla Jackson, 11, were among the six Oak Grove students who dropped off the candy, helped sort it out, and wrote cards to the soldiers. I just wanted to thank you for sacrificing your life for our country, wrote Kayla, who said it felt good and inspiring to take part. The girls agreed it was hard to give up their candy, but they were all smiles as the group told Dr. Brett Jerger that the school's total was 44 pounds. Jerger more than doubled the amount raised, giving the students $100 and thanking them for their efforts. Jerger said his favorite aspect of the event is looking through the notes and pictures the kids have written. It's really touching that what they put in there, usually unprompted, he said. Operation Enduring Support will continue to collect donations of candy, personal items, and notes for soldiers through November 16th. Items can be dropped off at the Grace United Methodist Church on Main Street. End of that article. Now to Crime in the Courts by Tony Reed, who's an H&R staff writer. Man accused of firing gun toward wife, her adult son, and her adult son. Decatur, an apparent lay fed up Decatur man who wanted his wife's adult son to move out of their basement Saturday afternoon, fired a gun in their direction and threatened to shoot both of them if the son did not leave, police reported. Timothy B. Wheatley, 63, was arrested by police on the driveway of the family home in the 200 block of Brownlow Drive after officers responded to an emergency call. Police said they had to order Wheatley out of a car he was using to try to drive away. A 25-caliber semi-automatic pistol he had allegedly fired was recovered from the vehicle's center console. Wheatley was booked on charges of two counts of attempted murder and aggravated discharge of a firearm. Another 44-caliber pistol was found in the home, and a check of records showed this gun was stolen from a police department in Indiana. Wheatley also charged with possession of a stolen weapon and not having a firearm owner's identification card. In a sworn statement, Officer Sean Bowser said the wife and her son told police there had been an escalating argument over the 33-year-old son living in the house. All three had ended up in the basement with the 66-year-old mother standing in front of her son as Wheatley pointed the 25-caliber gun at them from 7 feet away. She stated that Tim threatened to shoot them if the son did not leave, Bowser said in the sworn statements. She stated Tim was shaking all over very nervously and his aggression was towards her son. She stated that when Tim shot the gun toward them, one time missing them, she stated Tim continued to hold the gun on them and kept threatening to shoot them if the son did not leave. Bowser said police checked out the basement, found a bullet hole in the closet door and the wall behind it, and also found the fired bullet and one spent shell casing. Wheatley remained in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday in lieu of posting $200,000 bond. If he makes bail, he's been ordered to have no contact with his wife or her son and to stay away from the family home. End of that article. Under the category of local briefs, State Representative Bill Mitchell, Republican Forsyth, was at the county firehouse building today from 1 to 2 as part of his listing tour. Mattoon, PADS location defeated. The Mattoon City Council voted 5-0 Tuesday evening against a special use permit for the Mattoon area PADS to move its homeless shelter to the 2400 block of Marshall Avenue. Mayor Tim Gover said the city has heard public comments on both sides of the issue during the last week from dedicated individuals who care about their community. Gover said that most of the opponents of the permit have seemed to be against the proposed new location, not against the shelter itself. Gover said he hopes the PADS can find a location that meets the shelter's needs and is agreeable to those involved. And then another short, out of Charleston, charges in a fatal wreck. A Casey man told police he was scared and didn't know what to do after his pickup truck hit a motorcyclist, leading to fatal injuries to its driver near Ashmore last month. Jared L. Branson, 31, has been charged with failure to report a motor vehicle accident and with leaving the scene of the accident. The motorcyclist, Stephen G. Pedigo, 65, of Brockton, died after the accident at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. The accident occurred on the evening of October 24th on Oakland-Ashmore Road, about 2 miles north of Ashmore, according to the Coles County Sheriff's Office. Branson is scheduled to make his next court appearance Thursday. Out at Mattoon, Ryder seeks re-election. State Senator Dale Ryder, Republican Mattoon, has announced he is seeking re-election to the Illinois Senate from the 55th District. There is much work to be done in this state, work to balance our budgets, achieve government solvency, and to create economic prosperity, Ryder said in a press conference. Ryder has represented the current 14-county 55th District since 2013. Ryder said his priorities continue to be achieving a balanced state budget and supporting reforms needed to bring Illinois' economy from weak job growth performance over the last decade. And supporting reforms needed to bring Illinois' economy back from weak job growth performance of the last decade. Out of Clinton, toxicology reports awaited. Authorities were waiting for toxicology reports to officially determine what caused the death of a 32-year-old Clinton woman Friday morning. Christina Goodenay, 32, was pronounced dead at 11:10 a.m. at her apartment at 1700 East Main Street. Officials were called to the scene about 10 a.m. after receiving a 911 call from her boyfriend, Joshua S. Dubson. He was later charged with misdemeanor possession of drug paraphernalia and was released after posting $500. DeWitt County Coroner Randy Rice said an autopsy on Godinet was performed Monday. The Illinois State Police Department is assisting on the investigation after Clinton Police Chief Ben Lowers said the initial investigation led officials to think the death may have been the result of extraordinary circumstances. Next, Decatur Entrepreneur Series. First Busey Corp President and CEO Van Dukeman will make a presentation Tuesday, November 10th as part of the Millikan University Institute for Science Entrepreneurship Speaker Series. Busey is a series sponsor. The presentation about nurturing an entrepreneurial culture will begin at 7:30 p.m. in Lower Richard Street University Center. For more information, go to millikan.edu at the Institute for Science Entrepreneurship or email or call David Horn. End of that short. Continuing with crime in the courts, Decatur man back from Florida faces drug charges by Huey Freeman from H&R. Decatur. Harry Shavers, a 25-year-old Decatur man sentenced to life in prison in Florida in 2010 for the murder of a drug dealer, was arraigned Tuesday in Macon County Circuit Court on four narcotics counts, including a Class X charge for dealing drugs near a church. Shaver, who's being held in jail on a $100,000 bond, was arrested October 27th after Decatur patrol officer conducted surveillance on a Northwest Side parking lot known as the site of drug dealing activity. Daniels watched a car, which was parked on the lot of Price Right, for about 20 minutes. After the vehicle drove south on Oakland, the officer noted a traffic violation, initiated a stop, said a probable cause affidavit by Daniels. Ignoring the officer's effort to pull him over, the driver turned east on View Street. Shavers was subsequently convicted in the same case June 27, 2012, of manslaughter, grand theft, and felon with a firearm, and sentenced to terms of 8, 5, and 6 years in prison to be served concurrently. He was released on August 1, 2015, and then came here where he got arrested. End of that condensed article. End of part one for the Wednesday, November 4th, 2015, Decatur Review E-Edition. And this is Debbie saying I'll be back in a minute to do part two.